Oh, I'm Saywin Alden. Dubin's hired me a few months ago to manage the mill. I worked in Blue Lake at the North Fork Mill. It's a much bigger mill. We're more of a Gippo style mill where we have, we don't have a lot of machines, but we have enough machines to make lumber. And so we're making some pretty nice lumber. There was a lot of cleaning to do. So I think Roy got a grant when he was the manager to get a four-headed saw, which is a resaw, and we have a single-head resaw right now, and so we'll be able to make four times as much lumber going forward. And the former managers had had most of the lumber sold already, and so we are now making lumber for local contractors. We are not stamped, which is something you big mills have. And when I worked at North Fork, they would make about 120,000 board feet a shift. And so they were making quite a bit of lumber a day, where we are making about 600 linear board feet an hour. And so there's a lot of room for improvement. North Fork Mill is a much bigger mill, obviously. But as Dubin said, we're pretty blessed here in the Hoopa Valley to have a manageable forest. The mills have to buy their timber, and they buy timber from HFI. And so, my belief is that there's just a lot of upside with the mill as far as making money for the tribe and for the forestry department. So, and with the grant monies, they've done a great deal. I mean, without any investment from the tribe or from anybody, they have an operational mill. It's a Gippo mill, it's small, but and it takes time to make the boards. So we're making them one at a time, and so it's a slower process, because in the big mill, it's like, it's quite fast. And in our mill, it's pretty slow. But, I don't know if the tribe will invest in it. But moving forward, I know that they're, as Dubin said, they're putting in for grants. And so, there's a lot of room for improvement. We have a small building also, but they have improved the electrical grid. And so there's just a lot of room for improvement, and when we have the resources, and so I'm pretty excited about it. I got three guys working for me. We can make quite a bit of lumber, so that's what's going on. We're making lumber.
So one thing I forgot to mention too with our mill is the U.S. Endowment had some funding it's called the Beck Group. They're a consulting firm. So they're going to pay for all of the Beck Group to come down and consult with us to maybe do a better layout of the way our sawmill's laid out, try to get a better flow. They're going to help with sales. They're going to come up with a plan on how to best harvest the vertical grain lumber with our style mill. I think that this is going to be a great opportunity, because they're a pretty well-renowned group. They know what they're doing. So the Forest Service grant person, Jim, he's the one that kind of said that, hey, there's some funding available. Let me get you in touch with them. Then I reached out to them, and they had reached out to the U.S. Endowment. So all that's going to be paid for. It's free of charge for us, but we're going to get all the knowledge out of it. So that's a big win for us. I think it'll be great for our flow of how our machines are set up and how we process our wood most efficiently. So that's going to be nice, especially with our newer administration in the mill and our newer operators in the mill. So that'll be huge for us. Just kind of bear with us. We're trying to get this thing to work best we can. As for logging, we're going to continue to go forward. We're going to do what we can. Like I said in the write-up, you guys can read, it's a little bit better than what I can splurt out and kind of comment on. But we are going to be looking into downsizing in the next couple of years. It's just the way it's going to be. We don't have the volumes like we used to in the past. We were blessed throughout years and years of having, you know, for instance, taking this gym floor, and we could get several million board feet out of this gym floor. But now to get that same several million, we're doing like the whole property, you know, so there's more acres to process all the wood in, more cleanup, more costs associated with the logging. So we're trying to figure this thing out as we go, as we transition into the second growth, and we're working with contractors to help take the burden off us, but also we can learn from them. So we'll continue to push forward, and I'll be around this afternoon. If there's any more questions, we can go over it then. So thank you guys.
Thanks, Merwin. So we're going to go fisheries, PUD, and then Kamau. So if you want to come on up, Mike, please.
I want to try to get this right. We're sound check there. Can you hear me okay? Right. My name is Mike Orkett. I'm the Fisheries Department Director. I've been doing it for quite a few years now. Getting closer to a lot of the folks I work with are all talking about retirement or are retired already, and so there are some big things, hopefully, that we are going to try to get accomplished before I leave or pass it on to somebody else. And so for today, I wasn't aware that I was on the agenda, but we did produce a report. There is one in the back there for your reading and leisure. I'll highlight a couple of those and then go into a little bit of detail on some things that I think are really important for the tribe. Our report's back there. A major part of what we've done for many, many years is estimate the harvest. And you could, as you can imagine, the numbers are really reduced. A lot of people are placing a lot of hope in the dam removal on the Klamath. We are also trying to buffer some of that for us in terms of the Trinity River and our access to the fish that return to the Trinity River. So we estimate the harvest this year. By the rules of the Magnuson Act, anyway, there's a bunch of regulatory things that we have to be cognizant of. The Pacific Fishery Management Council sets a number for harvest. If we'd have went right by the number this year, it's about 300 adult fall Chinook salmon. They set that after the seasons are set. The state of California follows through in managing the ocean fisheries for the non-tribal fisheries. And the river recreational fisheries as well. And this year they had a small recreational fishery. Anyway, in the state side of it, there was a small fishery there. They closed the Klamath Trinity River for adult fall Chinook harvest for the last 3 years now. And so some of that is a buffer there. Based upon a former council member, Danny Jordan, where is he at there? So we wrote a letter back in June and said to the Interior Department, to the Commerce Department, the two major regulatory agencies, and said the tribe's going to harvest about 1,000 fish and assess and evaluate as we move forward to the season. Right now, the report says we're about 1,200 adult fall Chinook. Probably going to get about, we're still harvesting fish. We're not harvesting adult salmon Chinook at the weir right now, but it's going to be probably around 1,500 to 2,000 fish this year. And that demonstrates a need. The importance of that is to say, under the sovereign authority of this tribal council here, we have the right to assess, evaluate what the conservation standards, our needs are, and also the needs of the tribe. And so we really hammered that through in 2017 when we harvested well over the traditional number. And the Pacific Council routinely says it's the rights of the tribe under their sovereign authority to establish their harvest numbers. So that's harvest. The weir is a community project. I wanted to say this too, because I think today is a good day to be positive about things. I wanted to formally acknowledge and thank the departments that collaborate on the weir project. The Elders Program has been consistent participants for many, many years. Self-governance, where the fish are harvested, cleaned. There's an ice machine there. Food Distribution also has an ice machine over there. TANF has assisted with processing fish in the past. And so those are all, if I missed anybody, I apologize, but I tried to, that's been a real interdepartmental cooperative effort. It does provide fish to the priorities. This year was a dance year, so those are the top priorities there. And then the elders and the community. So that's a really positive program, in my opinion. As the chairman said in his report, we actually had the Bureau of Reclamation funding it this year. And it's really frustrating for me as a manager, as a employee of the council, because we've been trying to do that for 10 years. There's a Weir upriver, the state operates, and they've moved it four or five times. The original location, actually, when it was Forest Service land before the tribe got the land back, was at Tishtang. And so one of the other things, after receiving funding this year, the next year, we're going to negotiate the consolidation of the Weir here at Hoopaw. And so that will provide long-term stability. The data, the information will be the best scientific information and data there, in my opinion. And so that's something that will happen over the next year. The big things that I think are important, we are a co-lead in the reinitiation, a consultation, a bunch of words there, but under the Endangered Species Act, the last time they consulted on the Trinity River Division, the way the water goes down the river for the fisheries and the water is diverted into the Central Valley, is underway. We've been a co-lead with the Yurok Tribe for about 3 years now, maybe. And so you might ask, well, what's this administration's viewpoint on that? There's an executive order that President Trump put out. It's 14188. Says basically it's pretty crude, but it says get water from the north to the south. And so that is something we need to mitigate, weather the storm, so to speak. We're trying to retain the volumes of water that we have in this river for fish restoration. And a big part of what we worked on for many, many years is long-term stable funding to fund all this stuff. And so we have a lawsuit against the Bureau of Reclamation since 2020. We're actively trying to use the court systems to get that in place. We are working, as the chairman noted, directly with the regional director. We hope to meet really soon with the top-level people in this administration to determine what that need is. And one of the things, and beauty in my opinion, is the people have supported the diversion of this river in the 50s and have created multi-billion dollar largest irrigation in probably a company or corporate company in the world. Westlands Water District has benefited immensely from that water supply. And our lawsuit basically, in a real simplistic way, is the user and the beneficiaries should pay for it. That environmental mitigation should be paid. And we've had a bear of a time getting discussion about that. Hopefully the courts will rule in our favor, but we're also pursuing it administratively. And so that is something we just talked to the council about. We're gonna need to reestablish a major presence in Washington. And it's some ongoing discussion with the council about how we're going to get that done. But I just hope we've gotten some early indications in actually the letter that we sent about the harvest. Some of the top level interior people responded almost immediately. So I think there's a opportunity there, if we want to look at it that way, for some potential long term solutions. And Danny, I better see where he's at there. Anyway, Danny Jordan's came up with this idea that we need a divorce out of the Central Valley. Our water goes over the hill. It's been integrated financially, operationally. It's mitigated for many, many things that it never should have been done that we're trying to right in this regulatory process. But long term, we don't need to be looking at the legislative docket about, hey, they're going to do something to us in legislation or the lawmakers in this land. And so if we can come away with a long-standing, enforceable, and durable agreement, that's my hope before I retire, or at least setting something in place for one of my daughters might be a lawyer someday, so maybe they'll take it over for me, but we'll start the work today. So thank you, and I'll answer any questions at the appropriate time. Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Good morning. It's lovely to see all of these native faces. My name is Linnea Jackson. I'm the general manager of Hoopa Public Utilities. I have been in that position for over almost six and a half years. It is something that has been an honor, and I'm really passionate about what we're doing. There's a little bit of an echo. Does it sound okay? Okay, great. So for those that don't know, I just want to touch on all of the facets that PUD completes. We have multiple divisions. We have about six different divisions. We're facilitating 20 different federal and state and local grants. We employ 24 people, and since I started, that's been increased at least probably 60%. Most of our employees are Hoopa tribal members, so we're proud to employ tribal membership as well as community members, which is important. The first, I'd like to talk about the domestic water, which is one of the basic critical services that we provide. Hoopa Public Utilities treats probably 18 to 20 million gallons per month that's distributed to our population. There is a high-level process for treatment distribution that goes along with that. We're working with the Indian Health Service and the U.S. EPA on federal grants. And we have seven that's solely focused on water. Some of those are upgrading water storage tanks, and that represents millions of dollars worth of investment. So we're slowly but surely replacing all storage tanks that are the old Redwood style, some of the pumping facilities that need upgrades. So we will replace those last two by 2027. And we're trying to increase energy resiliency, so when there's power outages, we have backup generation for those. So we're really working on hardening the system. We have two water treatment plants, 20 storage tanks, 12 booster stations, and just for the water division alone, that's a lot of infrastructure to manage. But we are doing our best to facilitate safe drinking water for this community. I also like to talk about irrigation. I know this is a hot topic, not only for food sovereignty, but for growers, people with livestock, people that want to have their own gardens to be able to support their needs. It is something that I know is a community demand. Realize that we are working on engineering reports to update those, but the long-term solution would be to pump out of the Trinity River. We're working with Whitchurch Engineering to do engineering design, and realize that that's going to be a heavy lift on the infrastructure build. Right now we have six to seven individual systems, so that would mean storage tanks, new pumping, electrical facilities, and there would be a cost to implement that system. Just know that PUD is working on that and going to be holding community meetings. We've met with the Ag team, Klamath Trinity Resource Conservation District, and we'll be holding additional meetings, but we're seeking funding for that. So I know that that's a demand, I know it's a need, and we're working on long-term solutions for that. So Dubin's talked about the transfer station, and right now it's a shared space with HFI, and you know, with their opportunities for expansion, we are looking at building the adjacent transfer station on the Wagner property. Right now, in collaboration with TEPA, we're doing a brownfield cleanup grant because there was old mill activity where they are remediating some of the soil contamination that's happened from past activities. So we're cleaning up that land and revitalizing that station. So I've toured Humboldt Waste Sanitation. We're looking at different facilities, how they operate and function, and what could be possible here. We probably all utilize the transfer station. We understand the issues with the windblown trash, the steep grade. So we're looking to design a facility that really meets our community needs. So on energy, there was a project called Terrace, and it was the Tribal Energy Resilience and Sovereignty Grant. It was conditionally awarded from the U.S. DOE last January. There was a change in administration, and we all know that there's been rollback of clean energy funds to support tribes. We had an $87 million collaborative award that has since been rolled back as of probably 2 weeks now. That was in partnership with Redwood Coast Energy Authority, Shots Energy Research Center, and four partner tribes. The HOOPA 1101 circuit, which is a 142-mile circuit, is within PG&E's 1% of their top worst-performing circuits in their service territory. It's in their reliability report. And so we're on the factor of two of those metrics. One of them is the number of outages we occur. So it used to be PSPS, now it's EPSS, which is enhanced power safety settings. So if you know these little trigger points that happen and there's isolated outages that happen currently, that's the new EPSS. So if a bird strike, if a branch hits the line, it kind of automatically shuts that system down to prevent fire or damage. So we happen to have a lot of those that occur. So the energy resiliency would build long-term battery storage, solar sites, and it's really disappointing that that funding was rolled back, but we still have two other programs. So we have a California Energy Commission grant. We're working with PG&E on the Community Microgrid Incentive Program, and we're seeking philanthropic funding. So as a team, we are still moving forward with energy resiliency and upgrades for this community. So our communications and technology division, we've kind of called the broadband division communications and technology because we're now offering different services. So we're doing surveillance, we're doing managed networks, we're building a data center, and we're facilitating two large-term grants. Some of the slides that you'll see that I'll present next is touching on some of those. So you understand that we're doing fiber to the home. We are rolling out community events to sign people up for those service line agreements. We're trying to get ahead and go door to door so community members know when construction will be happening in your area. We're working with people to identify anything in your property. Is there gardens? Is there trees? Is there infrastructure? Do you have a propane line that we need to be aware of? So we're trying to get out ahead of the build on those with community engagement. So you'll see increased door-to-door, door hangers and engagement with our tribal membership. So with that, with the future of PUD, we're building a network server room with the capability of hosting the tribe's data. You know, maybe looking forward, maybe that's some of our archive records, maybe that's some of their cultural documents or tribal documents. A lot of our tribal departments don't have an appropriate climate-cooled area for their networks, so we're looking to be able to host those services within our building. We are changing and automating our accounting system. So this coming year, probably Q1 of 26, you will have the opportunity to be able to pay your bill online and have more streamlined reporting. And we're also looking to kind of get away from the paper documentation and be able to email you those invoices, whatever your preference is. But we're looking to upgrade our technology. So that will be rolled out Q1 of 26. So bear with us because we've utilized the MOM service, I think, at PUD for probably 30 years. So implementing a new system, there are going to be things that need to be worked out, but bear with us. So we're looking to streamline and automate our processes and have a better customer and user ability on your side. PUD, this is our third year of our standalone audit. We submitted on time and we had no findings. And I really wanted to commend my staff for the hard work and dedication that it takes because managing 20 grants, you're looking at appropriate expenditures and reporting and documentation. So I just wanted to uplift them for that. One thing that's happening with PUD, with broadband, with energy, with these funding agreements is that we're having to be more present with participating in open proceedings, submitting comments to record, pushing back on programs and state and federal authority when there's no carve-outs for tribes, when the agreements aren't in alignment with tribal sovereignty, so we're also pushing on that level. And I think the Hoopa Valley Tribe is really stepping up and becoming, being able to provide comments and induce change. So we've done that with several projects. So with that, there is a short PowerPoint. I can't quite see what's behind us. Jim, maybe we could go to the first one. So the broadband project, the Hoopa Valley Tribe had the first joint build with the state of California. That's huge. And that was for the middle mile broadband access. We are now 22% complete. The middle mile is open access from Willow Creek all the way to Wichpeck along State 96. So that's one separate project. The contractor, Glassroots Construction, is hiring subs, some for the bridge attachment. In order to meet timelines, there also might be some crews that are working at night. So we can only shut down one area of the highway per Caltrans specs. So coming, you might see some additional night work along 96. Next slide. As part of our NTIA grant, we're building two communication towers. This is the one that's up at Jones Point. And due to the proximity to the airport, we had to put up specific lighting for proximity to that. So if you see the Jones Point Tower, which is up on the hillside above Hoopa Modular, you will see white daytime lights and red lights that blink every 30 seconds at night. And that was a requirement due to proximity to the airport. That's going to increase our backhaul. We're working with potentially Verizon and T-Mobile to bolster cell phone service. So if you're in Campbellfield, you realize that there's pockets where there's no communication ability there. So we're looking to upgrade that as well. Next slide, please, which is our data center. This is a really exciting project. Again, it's going to be able to host our fiber termination and be that network hub. We'll have network servers. It'll be a new office space. And we're trying to model it after traditional looks, and we're going to have some red cedar that comes in, so to have it be more tribally centric, and that's going to be our long-term communication hub for PUD. The next slide is fiber to the home. So we're building off of our middle mile. We're building our backbones down the major roads. The fiber to the home project is to connect off of those lines and get our people hooked up. So through July of 26, we're offering free construction services. That doesn't require you to accept our service at this time, but it does provide the free construction of fiber and future-proof readiness for each home. That represents thousands of dollars, and all it would take is working with our staff to sign the agreement, whether that's tribal trust, whether you own the property, whether you lease. So we'll be doing outreach events on that. Again, we have to complete this project by July of 26, so there'll be a lot of community engagement and public access. Please feel free to contact us. There's a flyer in the back, and you can email us, you can stop by the office, you can call the office for a meeting, and we would love to engage with you. Again, this is free services, making your home future and fireproof ready through July. And with that end, I'm going to end that we were working with our contractors. We know jobs are really important, so Glassroots has hired on five different people of tribal membership and local people. And there's a flyer here. We'd be happy to, if you know if anyone's looking for construction specialist, laborers, traffic control, there are additional jobs that are available. And so I just wanted to say that Hoopa PUD pretty much serves everyone in this valley, whether that's internet, whether that's water, whether that's a transfer station. We appreciate your support. We do our best to try and be the entity that really appreciates your support, and we are happy to answer questions. Please call or come by the office, and we appreciate this community. So thank you very much.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I think we're waiting just for a little bit of slides to come up, and then I'll start walking through for where Kamau was this time last year and where we're at now and where we're starting to head off to. But while the slides are being pulled up, one of the things I want to talk about that's not on the slides is as we jumped in last year, we started looking at stability within the organization and where we were at. One of the top things we noticed is we had about a up into the 70% turnover rate within Kamau, meaning we were churning personnel. It's really hard to get consistency when you have turnover that's very frequently. So year to date, now working with HR, working with all the employees in there, we're down into the teens, and our goal is to get into the single digits, hopefully into this next year. And as we provide that stability, we can actually grow and create more enhanced care into those departments and build that bench strength back up into those areas. Well, I'll jump into a few of them, and I'll talk a little about data. As we looked into the year and we started pulling some of the data from Kamau and seeing where the health was within the community, one of the top things that we noticed is with our pre-diabetics, our youth. Our youth had a 340% increase in pre-diabetics on there. We know that diabetics are within the community. We know there's some kidney disease in the community, but that jump was substantial. The years before, these are in five-year blocks. The years before is only about 60%. So something changed during COVID for our food, for our nutrition, has really bounced up. Energy drinks, however we're providing for our youth. So as we're looking at this and we're jumping in, other data that we came up and started to look at was our lung disease. Lung disease is one of our top diagnoses within the community. It outranks everything by probably 3 to 4 times the amount. Kidney disease is still up there, along with the diabetics. And then the fifth one sitting on it is a bit of liver disease, and that's from histories for whatever reason, either alcoholism or traumas, and going down the line. From there, we jumped in and started looking at what is the change, what is this, how does this impact the community? Well, as we went over and started working with tribal enrollment and pairing up the data, we saw about a 15-year decrease in life expectancy among the entire tribe from starting from 2010 to or 2015 to now. On that. Now, the biggest drop in the life expectancy was among our 35 to 64 year olds. Now, that's a mixture of trauma, but it's also about the time that most of us start to see our illnesses, our chronic diseases start to pop up. So if you have uncontrolled diabetes, if you're pre-diabetic in your teens and it goes into diabetes, now you're getting into kidney disease. And then potentially going on to the dialysis and a few things like that within that age margin. And then what we do see along with the dialysis, we see a lot of patients and members that will say, you know what, I'm not driving over the hill 3 days a week. That's okay. You know, I'll take my chances. I'll work with what I got. That shortens the life expectancy down significantly among those members. So from there, we jumped into, they're still working on it. Where we're at and what top projects we want to work on this year. Of course, last year we started as one of the directives from the council and the health board is to build a dialysis den. So we have our dialysis den, which should be done, and I'll talk about that in just a minute a little more in depth. It should be done in February if everything stays on track. Our outreach, we started our hospital at home. Our hospital at home, this time last year, we had one member, one CHR that was out and seeing everybody. All the way up to about June. June, we grew pretty rapidly. June, we added a nurse, we added an RT, we added our wander doc or our physician, Dr. Young, and then we added 4 more CHRs to total out 5 right now. In June, we had roughly 230 elders or members in the community under our hospital at home or our outreach program. To date, we're at 446 members that we're seeing. Everything from going in for wound care to helping them with some of their ADLs, meaning activities of daily life within the home, to education, to food and everything else that mixes under CHRs for the community health representatives. Our hospital at home, I know Dr. Young will call me most nights and she gives a quick report on her way out and she'll talk to me about the members that she saw for any of the saves. Since June, when she got started, we're a little over roughly 30 patients or 30 members that she's been able to get in front of that have had severe sepsis. That comes into a Friday night and they're looking at, oh, I can't get into the clinic, they're booked today. And now that we would potentially go through the weekend where that would be an ambulance ride out. She jumps in, she goes and sees them in their house, got them started on their antibiotics, got them started on everything they needed, even IV fluids, and it was able to be able to save them, to be able to hold within their home and get them through that time. So they didn't have to go over to the main hospital. Next one to jump in that we started looking at for internal wise is our PRC. PRC, we know there's a couple areas that we struggle within the health system or within Kamau. Our care management and our PRC are probably some of the two top ones. Our PRC, looking at PRC this year, and we started focusing on that, PRC really is two separate entities. It's the referral process and the quasi-insurance. PRC covers some of the stuff, but doesn't cover it fully. But the referral process is more the issue that we started looking at, is how fast it goes out and what is the priority level that it goes out on that, meaning do I send out a person that needs a brain scan first, or the person that has a dermatitis, just a skin infection needs to go? So we brought in a clinician, started putting clinicians over that referral process, so there's that higher level of need and understanding where those referrals go and what needs to go with that referral. And we will start building that out. Right now it's in the fruition. We've got the clinician in. We've started getting all the puzzle pieces in, so bear with us. You'll see those changes as we start to move forward. Then going into our care management. Our care management program, we started partnering with the local acutes. One of the things that we did see is many times when our members came back into the community, we're missing that handoff. They come back into the community, and the main acute says, okay, you're home, you got everything, you walk away, and the member gets here, and they have none of the needs that are being met for home that should be met from post-surgery, from post-hospitalization, everything from a commode chair, do they need a hospital bed, do they need a walker, do they need a Hoyer lift, all these type of entities. So looking at our care management, I brought them down to meet St. Joe's case managers, Mad River's case managers, made those connections, and then from here, we're jumping on weekly meetings coming up with St. Joe's and Mad River to talk about our members that are in the hospital before they're discharged on there, so we can get ahead of it. We're also having one of our CHRs that will go down and see our member or even our clinicians, depending on how much of a need they are at, or while they're in the hospital before their discharge. So if it's a very intense or very large surgery, this is something that someone like Dr. Young, she goes, Ryan, I drive up there every day from Eureka. I can swing in, I'll see them in the hospital before they leave. So that way we know what's coming up here and we get a strong handoff of the members. So that way we have that continuity of care and the best care possible on there. And then jumping in, I know another one of the hot topics that's there is senior nutrition. Senior nutrition, we are working with the Yurok tribe right now, and we're postponing any of the policies that were supposed to go in place as of October 1st. We'll probably wind up kicking that can down the line through the first of the year while we evaluate senior nutrition. Our entire goal with senior nutrition is not to decrease any services, but how do we enhance or be able to meet the need of the volume that we have coming through right now? One of our top issues is warmers and cook space within the area of senior nutrition right now. It's being able to keep that food warm at a temperature for the amount of volume of people that we're serving right now on there. So we are evaluating that, and we're looking into the policy along with working with the Yurok tribe for their help for their members that are coming up and using our senior nutrition services. So bear with us, we'll work through this together. Mobile medical clinic. Our mobile medical clinic has up and got started. We had the dentistry out this last week. We've also had the medical side of that. I think hopefully everybody's seen it around the community, and it's also going to the school. It parks at the wellness center right there at the school. We actually get a lot of kids go through that just for questions, healthcare questions, everything from weight loss to women's health to sports and physicals and that type of questions in there. It's really good education, really good care to be able to put in for what they can do without the parents being there. If it becomes something higher, then the parents need to be involved and engaged in on that if it goes outside of that education piece. Then the biggest piece is our diabetes. As I talked about the dialysis center, our diabetes center, currently we looked all over the valley. I think JW has the patience of a saint because we drug him into about every facility we could to open up and take a look at, you know, does it have water? Does it have power? Does it have this? And a lot of times it was on the whim. We'd hear about a facility that's just sitting and we'd go take a look. And looking at all the facilities in the community, the only one that had a 400 amp breaker for us and the amount of water we needed was actually on our own campus. That was our diabetes center. So our diabetes center currently is moving over across from Hoopaw PD. It's not our dream location. We're working on a dream location with Councilman Marshall for hopefully we can build a full wellness center, something that is more like a rec center. I mean, big, where we can have diabetes and all that in there. This is temporary for the moment, and we'll make that part work. I think they're still working on the slide for getting up. So the next one is actually a picture, the drawing of the dialysis den. That's the remodel of the clinic. The picture you see there is a rendering. The rendering will be in 2027. The end of 2027, that's plans to be there. And that will add almost double the space to the clinic. Amber, if we can scoot about three pages in. All right, our dialysis den. Really excited about this. This has taken a lot to come together. Most dialysis centers and dens, they're about a 3 to 4 year build. It's not something that's real quick that gets done. But we've really been able to pull together the entities, the experts over this, and start to get all the drawings and the puzzle pieces in place. This is our current drawing. We have 8 chairs that we're looking at. The bottom row is all open. The 2 chairs that you see up top are actually isolation chairs. They'll be glassed-in rooms. So if we have a member that has a cold, they're sick, or something along that line, they still need to be dialysized. We can't let that treatment be missed. This allows them to be in an area with negative pressure so they can still get their treatment, not expose everybody, anybody else, but they still get everything that they need while they're there. So 8 chairs, by looking at the numbers, we'll start off slow, probably a Monday, Wednesday, Friday crew, working with Dr. Matthews in the Sonderling group. For that, with Matthews and everything else, we're probably going to fill every one of those 8 chairs pretty quickly and then wind up having to do a 6-day-a-week run. So there'll be 2 separate runs, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, then a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday run, and probably twice a day. So average dialysis spin takes 4 hours, so we'll have a morning crew and an afternoon crew. We're seeing roughly 60 members between Hoopaw and the Yurok tribe that are on dialysis, that either have to go around the horn from Wichipec down by Oryk and in, or coming up this way and up and over. So we definitely see the filling this need pretty quickly. Right now, we're in the RFP stage. RFP will go out hopefully first week in November. From November, then waiting for the RFP to come back. There will build between December to about mid-January or the end of January, and then hopefully opening first or second week in February. That's our game plan right now with everything that on track. The CC team is meeting them about once a week on this to keep the ball rolling and pushing it forward, where we're at with education, where we're at with building, where are there any barriers that we're seeing. So this is really exciting. This is a big project there. All right. I'll jump into the next slide. Next slide, of course, we started really enhancing a bit more on that patient-centered medical home model. But the piece that we want to jump over for the clinic this year, the top end is that second line, is our volume and growth. Our volume in the years to past have been sitting around 19 to 20,000 visits. This year, we're at 28,557 visits. I mean, we grew almost one-third the amount of visits this last year. So our volume is going up pretty substantially. We have grown some in our physicians. Now we need space on that. And so the clinic enhancement, that extra space, is something that we're really looking forward to be able to help meet those wait times for our members, so our members can get in relatively quickly on there. All right, next slide. This one just shows for our volume. Dr. Basir was helping me on this one as we dug through. He was looking at a few things and also seeing within the markets. Most of the markets, 2.5% growth, we had easily a 15% growth over our end. All right, next slide. So some of the stuff that we're looking at and worked on internally within the clinic on there, pain management. We know pain management and chronic opioid use within the Valley has been there. We formed a COPE committee. A COPE committee is a group of physicians and non-physician that oversee that pain management. Is there alternatives? Can we do chiropractic? Can we do acupuncture? Can we do whatever's needed to help with that member to potentially reduce that chronic pain management or leave them where they're at? Maybe they've been there for so long and that works for them and they keep them stable on that. But have we looked at all the entities or all the mechanisms of treatment around what we're doing with that member? And then jumping into our chronic disease management, really targeting that diabetes, hypertension, respiratory, and cancer. I can say this year we rocked it with what they called our GIPR report. Our GIPR, this is one of the first times ever that we made, I believe, 100% on our GIPR report. GIPR is a quality metrics that partnership and the state work on to say, are you engaging members for their annual visits? Things like pap smears and breast cancer exams for women, men for their men's health, prostate exams, their annual physicals coming in, all the way to, jumping down on there, your A1Cs. Are their sugars way out of control? Are we managing them? Are we working with them on any of that type of stuff? So this is one of the first years that the team's really focused in on that to be able to pull that forward. And then, of course, we talked about a little bit of the enhancing the outreach and the care management within there. All right. Next slide is where we're going. I talked some about the care management and the restructuring of our case management. So you guys will start to hear more often calls here coming up in this next year from the case managers at Kamau. Asking for everything from appointments to questions about health and engagement. What do you need at home? Is there things that are missing? Or even having a CHR come and just knock on your door and ask a few health questions as we look to engage more into the health within the community. The other big project that's working through is our EMR. Our EMR is... the platform is no longer supported by IHS. The EMR that we have, the electronic medical record, what we chart on, I used that back in the military back in the early 2000s. I mean, it's for an electronic medical record to be 20 plus years old, it's pretty outdated. So as that system has going to be sunsetted by IHS, we were moving to Epic. Epic is a national-wide system. It's probably the largest electronic medical record in the United States. One of the nice parts about Epic is you have MyChart. MyChart, real quick, you can jump up onto your phone. You can look at all your health care. Once you get your x-ray, as soon as the doc reads it, you can pop down and you can literally see what the report is on there being read before your primary doc gets a hold of you. You'll be able to see what the radiologist has said on there. Labs, you'll see labs instantly. As soon as they pop up and they're ran, they'll start to come up onto that. So Epic's going to be a very big change for this. It's faster reporting for the docs too, as they can narrate quicker. They're not jumping into all these different systems to be able to compile a HMP or a report. Next slide. Labs, there we are. Labs, so as we looked in and started jumping in with our lab, we send a lot of labs with LabCorp. In my past life and in this life, it seems LabCorp is maybe not the best partner with us. We have the space, and especially as we're growing, we have more, and we have the capability to do more of those labs in-house. So a lot of those labs that get sent out for general testing that take anywhere from 3 to 7 days to get back from LabCorp as a result, we're working on bringing those in-house so we can get them back and turned over within 45 minutes. So often by the time you even leave the clinic with your general visit, we'll have those numbers back so your physician can report on it and have a conversation if needed or make adjustments in any medication or treatment path that's there. Right now, we're looking at, with the equipment and everything moving forward, we should be able to bump up to about 80 to 85% of all labs done in the clinic itself. So we have about a 15% send out once we get all our footprint and our model set in. Just this year or over the summer, we picked up an RSV testing equipment. It's a rapid RSV. We didn't have this last winter. And things like that. A lot of our kids, we had to send over the hill into Mad River or St. Joe's just to be tested for RSV. RSV is one of the top mortality diseases among kids under the age of 2. Clogs up the nose. It's a respiratory distress. It's very significant. If they come positive, we want to get on it and start treating it early, as fast as possible. So that was a nice test. And that one's rapid. It comes back. We get those results usually within 30 minutes of doing that test on our youth. We added iStat machines. iStat machines, it looks like the old cell phones on there. They're fairly good size. This is something that goes with our mobile outreach. So they, if you're in your home, they can actually draw some blood, take a look, and run some basic results. So they can get a chemistry panel, maybe an ABG if you're a respiratory patient that's struggling breathing. They get quite a bit, or even some of the blood thinner tests on there. So we're excited to get moving down that direction to add more enhanced services. Then next slide, jumping into our MAP program. Our MAP program, meeting with the MAP team and areas there, we started looking at what are the needs. What are the needs in the community? Where are we at? One of the top needs that was brought up is we're missing a lot of our members. We have especially with the new chemicals and drugs that are out, are really tough to detox off of. A lot of the detox programs that are out there these days are still old school. They work great for some of the older medications, but they don't work for these new ones. Fentanyl, carfentanil, all those are extremely potent, very hard drugs for the body to let go of. So with that, started touching base with colleagues within the community and working with Judy, working with Dawn. We found an inpatient detox program at Mad River. So Mad River has an inpatient. We're going to start working with them and from a door-to-door. They'll do it 3 to 5 days, and then we will send on out to our rehabs and go from there. And we're almost done here, guys. We have our behavioral health program. Jump in there, as Chairman Joe talked about, getting in and working with the school. We're working on bringing on 3 more psychologists, LCSWs, LMFTs, to be able to help with our youth and help with our families. Because we see that we work with one entity within the community, the child, but we need that wraparound care. We need the whole family in there. So on that with behavioral health, that's probably our biggest change and our biggest move forward. Our sobriety camp was one of the largest sobriety camps that we had this yet to date, over 100 people. Next slide. Jumping in real quick, I'll touch base on these ones from behavioral health. Probably the biggest part is our Narcan. One of the things I want to just highlight is between our EMS. EMS last year was distributed roughly 77 Narcans. Year to date, we're at 36 on that. half of what we did last year. Now, the dispense downtown is staying in roughly 1,900 to 2,000, but we have not had any adverse effects within the community, meaning we have not come across any members that have passed away yet to date this year from drug use on that Narcan could not help. So a lot of them are self-administering. And then last one up is our picture, as I'm jumping through, is the new behavioral health building, and that comes to fruition the end of next year. So the behavioral health building right up to the side of it will be a brand new building that Harley and his team are working with and expanding our behavioral health model within the community. Okay, guys, and then I think that's what I have for the moment is just a quick highlight as the overall of the medical center. All right, thank you, Jim.
All right, we're going to we got about 20 minutes behind schedule. We did start about 10 or 15 minutes late. That was mostly just because there weren't a lot of people here right at 10. But we're going to go next to our Baker and Tilly, formerly known as Moss Adams, financial report. And then we'll have education do their report right after lunch instead of before. So we'll skip to the financial report, and then we'll move on to lunch. We have a local tribal member-owned business, MF Cravings, working with the 8th grade to serve you guys lunch. So let's go ahead and go to Baker and Tilly.